Welcome to the Raising Grace podcast. This is your host, Sheila Chester. I am the mother of three children, and I do not know what I am doing. So I'm contacting regular parents just like you and I to help me find the best ways to help my kids and myself thrive. And maybe in the meantime, I can help you thrive as well. We aren't so different, you and I. With a little grace, we can do this. Today, I got the chance to interview Kelly Fullerton. We met through a friend of, somewhere on social media. Either way, I've been following her journey for several years now and had to introduce her to you. Kelly has a chronic illness called EDS, hypermobility. It's a connective tissue disorder. She speaks to us about her journey through chronic pain, infertility, motherhood, and finding peace through all of it. I hope you enjoy listening to Kelly as much as I enjoyed speaking with her. Thank you.
So Kelly, who are you? Who is your family? Who are you a mother of?
Oh my goodness.
That's all the questions right now. Go.
So many questions. I'm so ready. Totally prepared. I am a mom to Lily, who is now 4 and a handful of months. The sass is strong with that one, which was always going to happen because I myself am sassy, which is great. And my husband and I have been together for 16 years, married for 9. We met at Vanderbilt, dancing on the bar at his fraternity. And I'm a chronically ill entrepreneur.
So let's start with, tell me what you do during the day. What's your business?
My business, I'm like, during the day, like which part of the day?
Exactly.
I feel like there's so many hats, right? So business part of the day, I am a coach for people, honestly, for like all walks of life, but specialty is chronic health issues and navigating the medical system and understanding that their issues with their health are not part of their identity, not who they are. They're not flaky. They just have really tough symptoms. Right. So I help them get to the bottom of what's going on. And really just like when your body can't shine, you can still let your soul shine. Like that's my whole thing. My business is called Journey to Soul Shine Coaching. I myself have been on that journey for over 20 years. It took me 14 years to get my correct diagnosis of what the hell's going on. And that was just when I started going to see doctors. I had symptoms my whole life. But it took until I was in high school and I played varsity, all of them, was a big athlete, and I had to default a tennis match because I was in too much pain and I was too exhausted to go on. And that was when my mom and my coach like listened and brought me to doctors because my pediatrician was like, it's growing pains because I've been this tall since I was in sixth grade.
How tall are you?
5'5". Like, it's not crazy.
Okay, so at 16, they're telling you have growing pains. And you're like,
no, yeah.
Mm-hmm, that ain't
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm, yeah, totally.
So what were you diagnosed with?
Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, the hypermobility type. It is a connective tissue disorder. So what's going on is the collagen in my body does not work properly. And so I'm super flexible in ways that really our bodies shouldn't be. And so the main symptom has been pain. And finally, when my husband and I had to take a break from doctors for a few years because it's just too much. They kept misdiagnosing and prescribing meds that screwed up my stomach, et cetera, et cetera. And we finally went back to a doctor and she was like, I think I know what you have. And she took x-rays of my lower back, my hips, my knees, my shoulders. And I was bone on bone. And there were bone spurs happening. Like, yeah. To which my husband, who works in the medical field, was like, oh. And that was the first visual that we've ever had of my health.
Nobody had ever taken an x-ray?
No.
So you had no cartilage there? That was nothing was
right.
cushion. Yep. All your cushion was gone.
Yep. Still is. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So in the middle of all of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you plan on having kids? Were you just assuming you couldn't have kids?
Yeah. Good question. So I got diagnosed at 29 and I went to randomly, there was like a connective tissue symposium that was being held in Colorado. And I was like, I'm going to go to that thing. And one of the speakers talked about family planning. And they were like, for people that have connective tissue disorders, you should have kids earlier on because your body just like crumbles, essentially. And they were like, so you should start having kids in your 20s. And I was like, I'm going to be 30 in like 2 months. What are we doing? So, you know, pulled the goalie. And then because we had always planned on having like a couple, maybe three kids. And I was like, I have a feeling my body is going to have a tough time with this, just because that's what my body has done. We tried for like, you know, several months, nothing, went to my OB, et cetera, went to the fertility specialist, diagnosed with PCOS.
On top of everything?
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, this is like a whole extra thing. And they were like, well, we have to wait for your body to have a cycle. And I was like, are you fucking kidding? It took over 100 days for my body to have a cycle. Yeah. Yeah.
Because of PCOS.
Yeah.
And you're not in any hurry or anything because your body's literally disintegrating around.
Totally. Totally. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And so that at that point, when I was told, like, you have fertility issues and you're going to have to go see a fertility specialist, I was like, I'm going to need a therapist. Up until that point, I didn't have someone to talk to. And I completely thought all of this was in my head until I got diagnosed a few months before that, because like a lot of doctors were like, have you considered that this is all in your head? Because it's an invisible illness. When you look at me, I look healthy. So all of the data around all of my symptoms are based on my verbal explanation. And when you're like, please listen to me, emotions come up and that doesn't help. Right. So, yeah, I mean, medical gaslighting for years. And so, you know, I was like, all right, I'm at my breaking point. This is my low point. Spoiler alert, not my low point. So went through fertility treatment, only had to do timed intercourse and we got pregnant. We used letrozole, like we used a hormone, but we were able to get pregnant. And then I miscarried at like 9 weeks. And then my pregnancy hormone didn't go down. In fact, it went up. So then I'm referred to a fertility oncologist who, you know, we had to do a couple procedures to figure out, like, yes, this is exactly what's going on. It was a partial molar pregnancy, which means that the placental tissue acts like cancer. Enter chemo.
Wait, so you did have to do chemo for this pregnancy?
Correct.
You couldn't do like a DNC.
Oh, I did.
But it continued.
But the hormone kept going up. Oh my God. My whole thing that I do with clients is like, we're doing science experiments. We're gathering data. Symptoms are not inherently negative. They are data. Right? Like when we are doing adding a medication, it's a variable. We want to keep the other variables static so that we understand what's going on with this variable, right? Like it is a science experiment. That is exactly what I talk about so that it doesn't feel like I am failing. I have no control over a fucking molar pregnancy. Are you kidding me? That's are we allowed insane. To curse on this?
Yeah, it's whatever. Okay. It's called an authentic podcast, Kelly.
I like it.
And I need you to use your words authentically.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, talk about not trusting your body.
to give you cancer when you're just trying to get pregnant. But it's not cancer.
It was it acted like cancerous tissue. So it actually can be, I'm pretty sure if it's caught later, it could be considered cancer.
Oh my gosh.
Mine wasn't. I was caught early. Yeah. And then, you know how during fertility, every cycle is precious.
Every cycle, but you're not every having them cycle. Very often.
Right. Yeah. So they were like, post chemo, once we know that that works, because I had to wait to make sure that that worked, you have to wait 6 months before you can start trying fertility treatment again. And yeah, so at that point, I wasn't rock bottom, because it was like, this is so fucking hilarious. How much more can we add? Right?
Don't ever challenge the universe to add anything else. You're like, what else can I take? They're like, give me a second. Hold my beer.
Do you want something? Because I got it. But yeah, so and rewind to when I was pregnant with the first pregnancy, I actually was able to go to the Mayo Clinic during that. So I was pregnant during that trip, and I was there for a week to learn, how do I live my life with a crumbling body? Right? Tell me all the things. It was the actual thing that I went to was a fibromyalgia clinic, because that's one of the diagnoses I have. I have a whole rap sheet. And it was the first time that an institution catered to people's symptoms. They had the air cool, but they had blankets for people's temperature sensitization. They did not allow any fragrances or smells. They had comfortable chairs with a lot of breaks. All of a sudden I was like, wait, we can accept this. And not everyone is it's not just an ableist society where I have to fit in and everything else I'm doing is me whining and complaining.
Or you should have brought a sweater, and you should have brought a snack, and you should just deal with whatever perfume or essential oil I want to wear today.
So I was able to meet with a whole bunch of different people while I was there. I was able to do a sleep study. I mean, it was a really wonderful opportunity. And I met with a physical therapist and an occupational therapist who is sit doing all of your chores. Sit while unloading the dishwasher. Sit while moving the laundry. Sit while, and I was like, oh, this makes so much sense. Okay. Yeah. And so they developed a plan for me to build up muscle, because that holds my joints in place better. So that is literally the only treatment that I can do is build muscle.
But even if you have that muscle built, the bone spurs are still rubbing. They're still rubbing. So all that does is it keeps you from being Gumby.
Yeah. Because yesterday when I was reaching to weed in the garden, I dislocated my rib, and then just eating dinner, my jaw. And that just happens. That happens a lot for people that have EDS. It's a total bummer, but it's also part of life at this point. So my mindset turned toward, instead of trying to get a cure, because there's no magic pill that my parents still hope there will be at some point, it's managing. It's how do I manage this? How do I know? How do I give what's happening a name and then figure out how to do a workaround? But when I was at the Mayo Clinic, they were all right, to build up to walking, start with 5 minutes a day. Only 5 minutes a day. Do not do more, even if you have days where you feel good, because that's what happens to people that have chronic pain, is on days that feel good, you do more, and then you pay for it for like the next week, right? So only 5 minutes of walking every day for 2 weeks, and then add 5 minutes for 2 weeks, and add 5 minutes for 2 weeks. And I was not able to do that when I got back from the Mayo Clinic, because like a few days later is when I learned that I miscarried. And I had to do my DNC, to which my body took like a week to recover from that. And anytime I tried to do, to get shoes on to go for a walk, my mindset was, I want to get strong for a pregnancy, which was a trigger, so I couldn't do it. And then I'd guilt and shame myself and go into that cycle for like a whole long time.
I 100% understand that, because without chronic illness and with every month that went by without pregnancy, it was so hard to just get up and do anything. And that was normal, healthy-ish person with no chronic illness, no reason. Like I had to find reasons every day to get up. And that's just infertility. I mean, that was just such a depressing state for me.
When we were told we had to wait 6 months, it was funny. We went, Joe and I had this like date night thing, and he said that life was good. And I wanted to rip his head off, because I was like, are you fucking kidding me? What? And I actually wrestled with that thought for like a few weeks. Like I was just like, why? Like, he says life is good, and that's great. What's happening in my life? Why can't life be good in my life? Because when you're told you have to wait 6 months for fertility, like, do we put life on pause for 6 months and just wake up then? Because it's miserable. Miserable.
You feel like, what's the point? Like, I'll just go to sleep, put me in a coma, and wake me up when it's time, because I have no reason to live at this point. It is, I don't know how to get across to people the effects of infertility on the brain, because women are so, I mean, we are biological creatures in that our purpose is reproductive purposes. And you can tell somebody all day long that that's not your purpose and that you need to find a new purpose. And I'm just telling them that we are animals that live on this earth, and our purpose is to reproduce. And my body is not reproducing. And what is wrong with me? And that's my fault. And what have I done to deserve that? Yeah.
Me, like, it becomes part of the identity. It's my fault. My fault. I have clients that are going through fertility treatment. I very much so dabble in that, because I know the experience. I mean, one piece of the experience. Everyone's experience is different. I don't want to say I know it's what it is, right? When I was staring down that 6 months, I was like, I need to get my shit together. I have 6 months to do whatever I want, basically. How do I want to use this time? And I want life to be good too. I'm jealous that you can say life is good, because I kept telling him, like, it's your turn. Like, I did the first one. You're up. So what can I do to make life good? And like, what do I want in my life? What do I want to surround myself with? So I threw a chemo party, because like, what else do you do? I was like, I don't want to mope around in my house anymore. And nobody knows how to talk to you. So we, at that party, it was, come over and bring food and drink that you can't have when you're pregnant. And let's just like be together. And it was so incredibly validating, because, you know, you put something together kind of last minute and like, who knows who can come? Like, everyone could come somehow, because they were like, it's a chemo, like, we have to go to that. If you don't come. But what was cool is people could ask me what was going on, and I could talk to them, and I could tell them how much I wanted to say or didn't want to say. Like, it was totally like, there was no precedent for this. Because it's really hard to talk to somebody in person and tell them what you want to say. So we put out a journal and said, leave some thoughts if you want to. It's like totally fine if you don't, but if you want to. And the backstory of this is elephants are my favorite animal. We called our first daughter Elle. And so we called Lily Peanut when she was in my belly. And also denim is a fave. Any double denim or multiple pieces of denim, I call a denim situation because it's totally a situation. And I think it's lucky. Like I just assigned luck to it. So like when you're at an airport, you see multiple pieces of denim and you're like, okay, like we're going to be fine. So the fact that this is like a denim journal, and it was unreal. I got so many like messages of you are so strong. I see what you battle each day. Things that people don't say, you know, they don't know how to say it. So, and that was what I had talked to my therapist about before the party was, I was like, I want laughter in my home. I want strong relationships. And I want to fucking say what I'm thinking. And I want people to fucking say what they're thinking. And I just want a real conversation because this is real. And so we came up with that. Let's put something out so people can write. And they did. And it was incredible. So now I've been writing in that journal since then. And like you can see flipping the pages that like, I mean, totally full. There's like 3 pages left, actually. And that experience really changed me, that party. Because from there on out, it was, I know people have my back. I know that we're going to be parents at some point, somehow. And the journey is going to suck. But I want life to be good. And so I leaned into the concept of Soul Shine, which has always been a favorite song of mine from high school. With my high school friends, we would listen to the song Soul Shine by Allman Brothers. But Warren Haynes sings it so beautifully. And the concept is, Soul Shine, it's better than sunshine. It's damn sure better than rain. Come on, people. Don't you mind? You got to let your soul shine. Like, you just have to let your soul shine. What else are you going to do? For those 6 months, I can choose my experience, which is weird because we don't usually stare down a timeline. Right? We're just in the rut of the journey. And it's really hard to like pause it, be able to get objective and really look at it from a different lens. And so that's what I do now, is I am able to help people pause, take a step back and look at what's going on in their life and what they want to go on in their life. What they don't want to go on in their life. And when you're talking about it from that perspective, choice is available. Mm-hmm. Right? Like you have to acknowledge, I have this like kind of 5 steps that I end up going through with clients because it's what I went through and it's what I continue going through when I get like a new symptom or something that happens. Like you have to acknowledge it. Accept it, you know, the longest part, name it, and then choose something about it, and then live it. So the first kind of choice I made around that was knowing that Joe and I decided to do an international vacation because I have traveled to 41 countries Very proud.
Is that all? Just the 41?
That's it. very proud. And I've made it a part of my career in the past. Like I worked for Lions Club International, which is like Rotary. It's a service club, mm-hmm. and it's international. I worked at the Chicago headquarters and I traveled a ton internationally for that. And then in my last job, I was able to travel internationally and do trainings. And so I was traveling to Dublin for work. And so we tacked on France and Croatia. And then from Croatia, we went to Bosnia and Montenegro. It was awesome. But I was like, okay, now I have my diagnosis. Now I know what's actually going on with my health. I'm not going to be able to travel the way that I used to, which was walk everywhere, climb to the highest point. Like even with pain, I ignored it.
That's what you do in your 20s.
Yeah.
You just go.
You just do it, right? You just do it. You're like, you know what? I'm like, yeah, I don't actually have to do that. So I considered getting a mobility aid, which I ended up going with a cane. And the consideration there was like, okay, what is stopping me from doing something like that? And I like went through all the different pieces. And the main thing that was stopping me from that was what other people would think, alongside with what I think. Like, I look fine. So what is this cane doing here? And she's so young. And yeah, you're too young for that. Oh, really? Okay. Let me hit you with my cane. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to just try this out. And if other people have stairs, they do. And if they ask questions, they do. And I came up with an answer. If somebody said, hey, like, you look fine, what's that cane for? I'd say, I have a connective tissue disorder. I'm in pain all the time. And then let them sit with the awkwardness of why did I ask that question? Maybe you don't ask that question to other people.
None of your business. Because, yeah. Why do you have kids? Where are your kids at? You
right.
seem like you should have kids.
Right. Yeah. Totally.
My uterus doesn't work and it hasn't for 10 years. So thanks for asking.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. Have you guys considered children? Have you considered you're an asshole?
Yeah. Can you give me $10,000 right now? Because that's how much I'm in debt. Okay.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. Lily was about 10 grand, I think. Once I realized the things that were stopping me from the mobility aid, because I was like, actually, that might be awesome. That might allow me to do more. And it might allow people to give up their seat on a train or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like I might actually get people to look at me the way that my body feels, which was mind blowing. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to make this an extension of my personality. And I had Joe put washi tape on it and it looks like a candy cane. So we called it Candy the Cane. And it's incredible. Candy the Cane is an extension of me.
How old were you when you decided to do that?
31.
So you were young.
I was.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And I still use, I have Candy 2.0 now. But I mean, same thing. It's just a black cane and it has gold and white washi tape on it that looks like a candy cane. And I've learned that when you walk into a preschool and the kids, Lily's friends, ask me what's that, and I say, oh, that's Candy the Cane, all heads turn and like, candy cane? Like, you have treats?
So, that's the most popular mom in school.
Yeah. But I mean, Lily is like, oh, that's Candy the Cane, it helps mama. She has no preconceptions. I recently got a rollator, so like a walker that has four wheels and like a seat. It was in our Buy Nothing Facebook group for free. Somebody said, anyone want this? And I was like, yes, I wouldn't go out and buy this, but I want to try it. We brought it to a Dave Matthews concert a few weeks ago, which was awesome. And I have my seat, and I have learned now to look for disabled seating everywhere. And it is an incredible perk. I mean, like, I can cut the security line and go in the disabled line. I can pre-board. I can take the shuttle at Red Rock, so there are no stairs. They bring you right to the bottom of the venue, and then you're there, and then they serve you. You have, all you have to do is ask. And I mean, there's this unsaid between Joe and I, and then also the friends that we went to, which is, at any point, if anyone wants to leave, no questions asked.
That's a good rule for anybody, okay? I don't do late night concerts. It's 8:30. They haven't come on. We're going. Okay. I don't care how much you paid for these tickets. This is what I need to do. I need to go to concerts where I know they're going to show up on time and they're going to finish up on time, because mama's got a bedtime and I'm tired.
And no opener that you like don't care about. You know, it's like, it's, yeah. Anyway, yes. Research has been done ahead of time to make sure that that it's going to be a smooth experience. I mean, and that's a huge piece of my coaching now from my experiences. Ask, tell somebody what you need, ask them what they're thinking. I mean, once you realize that you can actually say the thing and you're not an asshole for doing so, because it's coming from a caring place, you can't watch TV dramas anymore. You know, like, they're totally ruined because you're like, all of this is happening because somebody had expectations and the other one didn't meet them. And nobody actually said what was the problem. Like, so now TV dramas are like, oh my God, just say the thing.
They're going to say it at the end. You know, they're going to say it. That's the rule. You got to say it at the end. That's how
yeah.
it works. You know, like, you, what yeah. you're saying is ask, but also speak up.
Speak up. You know, I, Lily is taking a swim class now on Wednesday night. So my plan today is nap for several hours before taking her. And, she has one other kid in her class, and the mom has become a friend, and she's noticed me with Candy the Cane. She's noticed me wearing sweatshirts like I am now that say, my fog is very brainy today. And she's asked some questions, and it turns out that she's pretty flexible too. And so we've talked a little bit more, and I've gave her some more information, and a light bulb went off, which was, I am not oversensitive. I'm not a whiny, flaky person. All of these pieces of me are symptoms. And there might actually be a name for this. But because you and me and her, we're all peons, we don't know medical jargon, how do we explain what it is that's happening in our bodies to a provider in a way where they can understand it?
And we're in a way where they're willing to listen to it, where you're saying, I'm serious. I will not leave this office until you give me an answer or give me a direction to go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you get to hire or fire your doctor.
You just have to make another doctor's appointment, which is really annoying. And then find time to go to that doctor's appointment. And the cycle continues.
All of those things. Yeah.
So you waited your 6 months.
So my fertility experience is very different from others when they talk about infertility, because typically that means IVF in some capacity, right? And thankfully, I did not have to go that route. I did, however, after a few days learning I was pregnant, I found out I had mono, because thanks, universe, thank you. It's, yeah, which is, yeah, you put your hand on your head because you're like, okay. I mean, it was a journey. And when Lily was born, I was in the best headspace of all time. 6 days later, I was laid off. 6 days postpartum.
Can you be laid off while you're on maternity leave?
When you have less than 50 employees and you don't have FMLA, then yes, you can.
How was your pregnancy with all of your connective tissue stuff? Because your body gets more loose.
Yeah, it did. It sure did. My SI joint was just like all over the place.
Just floating in your hip area. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. And it actually went way better than we thought it would. It really did. And labor was incredible, which is not a term that people use. But so during that time too, I really started paying attention to my body, because here's what people do when they have a lot of chronic pain or different symptoms or distrust their body. They shut off all messages coming from their body. Right.
Yeah. I did that just with infertility. Yeah. I did that. I'm like, I don't trust you.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Like any signal you're sending, fuck mm-hmm. off.
Yeah.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, with my therapist's help, I leaned into the pain and just kind of sat there and noticed where it was. And I started doing some of those somatic exercises, which is like mind body. So, okay, I'm paying attention to the pain, and then I'm going to move to somewhere else in my body that's like neutral, like the tip of my nose. And then I'm going to move my attention back and notice if it's different at all. And sometimes it would be less. Sometimes it would be more, but most of the time it would be less, which was mind blowing that I had some amount of influence. I won't say control, but influence on what was going on. And I realized that a lot of what's going on in my body is like, you know, my bones are hitting each other, and that sends these signals of fight or flight. And so I get muscular pain, like I get nerve pain, I get all of these other things, because the whole body is like, alert, alert, something's happening. And I'm like, I know. Thank you.
We've
I got
been
it.
Through this body.
Yeah.
Every
yeah.
Day.
I hear you. And when that's happening, this is what I learned at the Mayo Clinic too, is my sympathetic nervous system is heightened. And a way that you can influence that is diaphragmatic breathing, where your belly is going in and out and your chest remains flat. And when you do that, you're calming your diaphragm, which is helping your body get to the parasympathetic nervous state, which is rest and digest. So you can actually like slow that sensitization down. You can ground a little bit better. You can neutralize a little bit so that it's not complete high alert, which was new information to me. I thought it was like pain, no pain. How did like that? This just happened and I was the recipient of all of this, right? So to learn that I could actually participate in some of my symptoms was really interesting. And not get angry with them, but just notice, just simply notice. So I can actually slow my heart rate down, which definitely nurses have been like, hold on, I got to get another nurse to come in here and watch this, because I'll like, because numbers, like I'll go from like 118 to like 82 in 30 seconds from just doing the diaphragmatic breathing and letting my body relax. So labor, I did that. And it was super calm. And I'd have a contraction. And then I'd go back to like eyes closed and doing some breathing. And I could actually tell when I was about to get a contraction before the machines could.
Because you were that tuned I felt in just like to your body.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Which is mind-boggling. Now I'm able to really identify more of what's going on in my body. A couple of years ago, the summer after COVID started, I had shortness of breath as a new symptom, which was like not awesome timing. But it turns out that a medicine I was taking was causing, it was causing the fight or flight mode. And that was causing my breathing to differ. And turns out I have vocal cord dysfunction because everything has collagen in your body. Everything has connective tissue. So my vocal cord flap doesn't operate appropriately.
Of course. Because, add that to the list.
Of course. Right. But so that was very interesting. And then I was referred to like a speech therapist who gave me some different breathing exercises who then became my client. And now it's referring my physical therapist is also my client that refers people. I mean, it's
a team effort, Kelly. Life is a team effort.
Effort.
We should be mentoring with our best friends and letting them mentor us. That's how this works.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like you have a piece of knowledge. Instead of I'm jealous of you, you have expertise in this area. Teach me.
Being curious is one of the best qualities human beings can have. Being not open, you know, when people are so said, this is my opinion, I'm never going to change it. It doesn't matter what your opinion is, it's wrong. Because you if you're not willing to be curious.
You cannot be both curious and judgmental. It's one or the other. You're either judging something or you're curious about something. So when you're curious, you cannot judge the situation. Phenomenal. You know, my day-to-day at this point, because I have now constructed, here's what my business looks like to fit into my life. Can I fit my business and my life together this way? Mondays are me days. I recover from the weekend. Typically, literally nothing happens besides me resting. Sometimes it's appointments if I can't get them on other days, but like it is just there are no expectations for the day because my body needs to rest from what we did over the weekend. I nap every single day. I have calls and appointments in the morning as much as I can, like as much as is possible, because my pain gets worse throughout the day. So if I do have an activity later, I get anxiety about whether or not I'm going to have to cancel that thing based on my symptoms. So it's hard to commit to a doctor's appointment at 3:30 because I don't know what my body will be like at that point in the day. I want to take more meds, but then I can't drive, right? So typically my day is I wake up, get my daughter ready for school with my husband, and then I drive her to school. It gets me out of the house. It gets me moving. I do whatever errand. It's either an appointment or an errand. It's not both. And it's not more than one. And then I come back and I sit down at my desk and I see clients. And then it's up to me and I nap. And then my husband picks up my daughter on the way home. We have delineation of tasks. I do all the sitting tasks. He does all the standing tasks.
Well, that makes it clear cut.
Right.
But you've probably learned to do laundry sitting, and you've probably learned to do the dishes sitting, and you've probably learned to do a whole lot of things sitting down. So
I sure have. I have a mama chair, which is just a chair that's on the floor that has a back. Like, think Crazy Creek, but not squishing your body together. And so when I'm sitting on the ground and playing with Lily, I have a back to my feet. I have a service dog that comes with me, Rogue, who is the dog that we've had. She's 13 and a half. She comes out. She's my service dog. We learned that she has liver cancer, but she seems fine as now. But so we have our other dog, Ranger, who's 8, is learning with me what it's like to go out and be next to a shopping cart and
not try to lick every single person that walks by.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that makes me approachable for everybody. They want to come over and they want to talk about the dog.
Do you want to be approachable then?
I want to be able to give somebody a smile because I feel like I am the face of more than just me when I'm out with my canes and my service dogs. It is, yes, you can talk to people about a cane. Yes, people can be in pain all the time and smile and have a kid and be at Target. Like, it's possible to still have a positive mindset when your body is disintegrating. It's possible. It takes a lot of work, but it's possible. So when people come up to me and they smile and they engage and they have a positive interaction with me, that makes me proud because it's a reflection of all the work I've done, it feels like.
Right. You're living a good life. And you have a service dog and a cane and a dog, and you're doing all the regular mom things.
I am, just slightly differently.
Have you had to transition your lifestyle with your daughter? Because I have 3 kids and like, you can't pick her up, I imagine. I mean, you can't do a lot of things. I mean, you can sit on the floor and play, which is all my 3-year-old wants, except for when she wants up. It's either bend down, stand up, bend down, stand up. So how have you worked that into your daily?
Yeah. I mean, it's a great question because it's developed over time, but early on, when I was laid off and it was just me with Lily, we decided to still put her in daycare, but part-time so that I could have time off, even though I didn't have an income coming in yet, but I did have severance. So we were like, all right. So she has gone to daycare since she was born. There were 6 weeks where she didn't, I think, during COVID. And my body took a big hit from that, of her being home every single day. I had to up my meds and I'm still trying to wean off of them from that experience. But yeah, from the start, it was, she's going to go to daycare and we're going to figure out finances because my body needs breaks. I breastfed for 16 months, which was incredible that my body did something correctly.
Isn't that such an amazing feeling? To be able to breastfeed, even after everything that you're like, I'm expecting to fail at this too, because my body.
Yeah.
And then
I got postpartum depression when I weaned her.
Yeah, you did.
Didn't know that was possible.
Yeah, you did.
Thank you, universe. Yep. Yeah. But I mean, so from the beginning, Joe and I were like, he's the one that's going to lift her. Right. Like when I was home with her in the very beginning, she was so light, but I would do everything that I could to be sitting when I was holding her. And as she grew and wanted up, Dada does running, Dada does park, Mama does snuggling, Mama reads books, Mama does crafts, Mama does, right? So she knows even now at 4, she's like, Mama, can you lift me for that thing? Dada's not here right now. And I'm like, let's pull over a stool. And she's like, okay. But she knows not to ask me to lift her because I just can't. And so when she was, I want to say when she turned 3, I laid out 5 of her plastic spoons. Have you heard of the spoon theory? Okay, so this is for people that have chronic illness and they needed a way to talk about how their body changed each day, like the expectations of what their body was able to do, sometimes good day, sometimes bad day. But again, it's an invisible illness, so nobody else knows, is it a good day or a bad day? And so you can seem like you're bipolar, basically. And so someone invented the spoon theory. The reason for that is she was at lunch and there were spoons on the table. It could literally be any object, but that's why it's called the spoon theory. The concept is a normal person, a healthy person, has an unlimited number of spoons in a day. They can think of that as like energy, you know, like they can get a second wind, a third wind, like they can just keep doing stuff. Somebody that has chronic illness, they only have a couple spoons and each task takes a spoon. So like if you wake up and you only have three spoons, it's like, I know that getting Lily out of the house and taking her to school is two of my spoons. So what am I going to do for the rest of the day? Because I only have one left, right? And if you do more than the spoons that you have, you're borrowing from tomorrow's spoons. So I laid out five spoons with her and I was like, this is like mama's health. When I have all five spoons, we go to the zoo, we go on a long walk. We do, you know, like all these different things. We have like a play date, yada, yada, yada. When mama has one spoon, we snuggle on the couch and we watch something. And she's like, okay, okay. So I was like, what do we do if I have two spoons? And she's like, we read. Yeah. What about three? We do craft. Yeah. You know, so she kind of started to name that. So now she knows mama doesn't have a lot of spoons. Means that I need to rest, and it has nothing to do with her. How much I love her. If she did something wrong, you know, as soon as she started realizing that some days I could do things and some days I couldn't, and she started asking questions, I was like, we need to teach her the spoon theory so that she knows that it has nothing to do with her. Zero. And it has nothing to do with me as a person. It just is. It's just a variable in our lives that my health goes up and down. And we all cater to that accordingly. So sometimes she'll like ask, mama, do you have enough spoons to do, you know, and fill in the blank, which is awesome. It's really awesome. So that's kind of how we navigate it with Lily is mama's health is doing whatever it's doing. So if you really want to do something, let's figure out how. Right now we're both problem solving something.
It's a team effort. She's involved.
It's a team effort.
And how do we figure this out? And she's not like, go sit in the corner. Mama doesn't feel good today. Like go do something by yourself. Mama doesn't feel good today. You know, and then that shapes her entire childhood. But her childhood is now, I help mama. I help her.
Yeah. And like, I don't want her to be so helping that she's like a caregiver. Mm-hmm. Right. So I talk about that too. Like, it's okay, Lily. You don't need to do that piece. Like, mama can do some things too, you know, so that because I have clients who are like, oh my God, I had to do all this stuff for my parents. And I'm like, yep, nope. We're going to make sure that part doesn't happen too. She has a 50-50 chance of having what I have. So we're just watching for flexibility, which is so hard because kids are flexible.
Yeah. Yours showed up in your teens?
That was when I finally got people to listen to me. But it was my whole life.
So what advice do you have for maybe a woman who is considering having kids or questioning whether they should have kids with the chronic illness?
So personal. Yeah. A lot of clients that I had early on in my practice were people that had chronic illness and that were of childbearing age that were trying to make that decision. And they saw me with just having had a kid and they were like, can I talk to you? Right. And it is a personal piece, but in my experience, you need to have a solid support system. Because there are days where you need to tag out. So that support could be anything. It could be a nanny. It could be, you know, a spouse. It could be family. It could be friends. I mean, there have been times where Joe's mountain biking and I dislocate my hip and I call my friends and they come right over and they're on tap for Lily. You need a support system because when you can't predict what your body's going to do, there are some times where you just need to rest. And when you're a mom and you need to rest, all moms go through the same experience. There's guilt, there's shame, there's, I don't need to do this, I'm fine. I can handle this, right? All of those things come. But when you have chronic illness, when something is going on in your body, you need to rest. Otherwise, it's just going to escalate or it's going to keep going. So that would be my biggest thing.
And then what about advice for women who have kids who are finding themselves with a chronic illness that they didn't realize they had, they just thought they were these whiny people and they, you know, yeah. How do you give advice to somebody who used to be able to do it all, who, and their kids saw them do it all, and now they're losing that?
Yeah, good question. Give yourself all the grace. It is not your fault that these things are happening. If you had a choice, you would not be choosing this to be happening. Share with your kid what's going on. Be honest about what's going on in your body and don't try to hide it or mask it from them, because that then adds layers of shame for them when they experience people with disabilities or illness in different ways. They don't know how to talk about it because they've never experienced it, right? Bring them in on the experience. Tell them something's going on in my body. I'm not quite sure what it is, so I'm going to go to some doctors and I might be starting some medication. I don't know yet. And collect all the data that you can, data being symptoms. Keep a journal of symptoms or a list or something, because when there's more than one trigger going on, it can feel like a billion things are happening to you at once. And it gets really muddy, really fast. So does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Yeah. I mean, I have this struggle. We're actually talking about it right now with skiing with Lily. She's done little shredders a couple times, like indoor ski school. Mm-hmm. It's great. And when she goes out on the hill for the first time, I really want to be there because I was on a race team when I was a kid. I love skiing. I actually, when Joe and I went to the doctor and we finally got my diagnoses of like, okay, so you have this and this and this, and yada, yada, yada. She was like, you shouldn't really be walking more than 10 minutes at a time. And I was like, but I just got new skis. No.
Can I just race down the mountain? Just a little race. Just a little.
Yeah. Just a real quick. That's fine. I'll do it with my good leg. You can take the other ski. It's fine.
You need to attach a ski to Candy.
Yeah, team. Exactly. Oh, they have those.
I got you.
They have those.
I got you.
They have poles that have little skis on them. But yeah, I really want to be there with her because I want her to know that I'm capable when it comes to athletics. I can do these things. I have the skill. And I did them when I was young, and my body no longer wants me to do those things. And I wish I could. I want to do them with her. But in order to have energy to be present with her and play and do all these other things, I have to skip that activity, which really hurts. There's a lot of emotion involved in that. So I may just be in my warm clothes and not in boots and skis. Also, that's cheaper because I don't have to pay for a towel.
Very expensive.
But like, I always imagine myself in skis in a slow pizza with a little kiddo that I'm holding up. And that probably isn't going to be the case, you know? But it's nothing I did wrong. It's not my fault. It's not their fault. It just is. So how do we deal with that? It's okay to process those emotions. It's okay to be sad about that and pissed and all of those things. And then what do you want to do about it?
Right.
So I want to be there with her no matter what. Because I taught Joe how to ski. He was a boarder. So when we moved out here a decade ago, I was like, here's how you ski. So
what's your last word on this? What's some grace you can give yourself?
Here's what I want to say. This is a postcard that's a map of the world. And a friend of mine wrote, embrace your journey. Don't run from it. Don't crumble in it. Embrace it. And when you embrace it, you can let your soul shine. You can really shine.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with Kelly Fullerton. If you want to talk to Kelly personally regarding your own chronic pain journey, you can find her at journeytosoulshinecoaching.com. As always, I and my guests are no parenting experts. We are just doing our best in this wild world of parenting. Please give yourself and your family a little more grace today. Thanks for listening.